No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gremling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And Connor, we haven't had a lot of winners in primetime football in the 2022 season. Everyone's trying hard. Everyone's doing their best, but the games haven't been great. But we had a really good one on Sunday Night Football.
Do you think that when networks vie for these games that it's a lot like our fantasy football? And so, you know, like 4 weeks ago or whatever, the guys from NBC are just like, damn it, Falcons, Panthers, you know, and it's just like the equivalent of whatever, Josh Palmer sitting on someone's bench and scoring 30 points. Do you think that that's how that goes?
I like to think it does.
Yeah, in the world that we've created. But this one was pretty easy to peg at the beginning of the year that this was going to be a banger. I hoped it would be a banger. The Chargers got healthy, and lo and behold, Gary, banger.
The Chargers briefly got healthy.
They did,
and then got,
yes.
And then got less healthy. And this has to be frustrating for them because they've kind of had the Chiefs' number. And we're speaking relative here, in relative terms, they've kind of had the Chiefs number for a couple of years now. I thought they clearly outplayed the Chiefs in their first matchup this year, that opening Thursday night game that ended up swinging on the, you remember when Gerald Everett got too tired down in the red zone and what would have been a Chargers touchdown turned into a pick six the other way, and
yes,
that's how the Chiefs ended up stealing that one. This one, I think these teams were pretty evenly matched. It was just good. It was such a relief to see the Chargers run in NFL offense for Justin Herbert with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams back. I guess gave them the confidence to do it and to call plays like you have a quarterback who can, basically put the ball exactly where he wants anywhere on the field instead of doing what they had been doing, which is, I don't know, calling plays as if you were playing football underwater?
Oh.
In the center of the Earth, maybe? Or maybe a very large planet where everything, the gravitational pull is heavier, so you just can't really, you can't throw it as far? Maybe that's it? They were on the surface of, Jupiter doesn't have a surface.
It'd be really fun this one. To dress up as the guy from History Channel's Ancient Aliens and then go to like a Joe Lombardi press conference and just say, are you calling plays for Earth or are you calling plays for another planet?
I'm sure there's some exoplanet or something that we could pull this together. I will work on that this week.
Okay.
And I will come up with a Chargers offense interplanetary comp for what they had been doing for like weeks 4 through 10 or so.
Very
cool. But it was better tonight. And that's the important thing. We're fixing this. We are getting Justin Herbert doing Justin Herbert things. And that is a good thing. But Mike Williams went down in the first half and, you know, they didn't really have that downfield element after that, except for the one deep throw to Keenan Allen. But they just—I don't know. It looked like a team that just trusted their receivers a little bit more, with Keenan Allen even just sprinkled in, and no Mike Williams in the second half.
Which is why, and I guess we're skipping fast forward a little bit, but feel free to rein me in.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be wrong, but which is why you got 30 seconds left in the game, you got a full complement of timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you why do you go right to the QB draw? And I don't know if that was a design QB draw or not. It could have just been Herbert kind of seeing the opening, and there was certainly an opening there.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm just going to take this. I thought things were going well. They had open receivers throughout the day, you know, and I figured you just trust that and you keep going with that. And obviously you don't want to, yes, you have your timeouts, but you don't want to run the ball, put the ball on the ground, waste more time off the clock. So I don't know. That was a confusing one if it was designed. And he kind of stepped like it was designed, but it might have just been a quick instinct thing too.
Yeah, I thought it might not have been designed. And probably by the time everyone hears this tomorrow morning, they might have an actual answer to this question.
True.
I thought that was Herbert kind of doing a a little in-play improvising there. So not exactly sure. And look, if Chris Jones doesn't make that play, maybe he goes for 18 yards and it's a different conversation now. But that was the one bummer. I mean, look, 31 seconds is plenty of time with three timeouts to move the ball in the field goal range, and they didn't come close. But you did see some semblance of what the Chargers were supposed to be in 2022, and we'll see if they can get back there. They're 5-5 now, and look, the defensive side of the ball, it's going to keep being a problem for them, and the Chiefs are obviously very good, but it's like the Chargers either have to come out and be like, okay, they just have to telegraph, like, we're playing the run. We're putting six guys on the line and a linebacker basically a half step back from the A-gap. We are going to stop the run now. Or they have to back everyone off and be like, we are going to play the pass now. They just don't have very good players in the front seven.
I mean, they don't have very good players in the front seven. And on the go-ahead touchdown, you and I were talking about this before we started the show. Derwin James, I don't know how that happens. And the crossing routes are obviously designed to force you to lose a quarter of a step, which is all this separation that Travis Kelce needs. But he had a half a step before he got the quarter step. And I don't know how that happened.
No hands on Kelce on that play as well. Really weird. Again, like you said, we were talking about before we sort of press record here, it was the rare play that you could see immediately, because the route was shallow enough, you could see immediately on the broadcast that it was going to be a touchdown. It was just that easy. So it was kind of, you went out with quite the whimper in this one if you're the Chargers, really on a night where you once again went toe-to-toe with the Kings of the AFC West here.
You have to at this point, I think, if you're Brandon Staley, there's a lot of pressure on this job. There's a lot of pressure on the Denver job. There's a lot of pressure on a couple of these jobs where, whether they're correct or not, the owners think that the quarterbacks, given the quarterbacks they have, they should be overperforming in this situation. Herbert is a tough one, right? Where he's going to cost $55 million a year here in a couple of years, and you really want to punch the pedal before you have to start doing that. And I don't know. Games like these are tough because I think it represents progress, but I could also see it being the kind of game where an owner will come in and smash a table and be like, well, we have to do this or do that or change this, when I really do think, when we talk about the goulash all the time, Gary, that the Chargers are like this 5-5 team that we could see being 10-5 in a couple weeks and just being like, yeah, okay, this is the game they kind of turned it around.
Cowboys Vikings.
Thank you, as always, to Jimmy Traina of the SI Media Podcast, putting us on the Jimmy train to take us through the rest of the Sunday action. Look, there are a lot of people in this industry, Connor, who, not you, but a lot of people who kind of do like wish fulfillment for fans and kind of just, whatever, just whoever your favorite team, you're overwhelmingly positive about every team so that every fan base loves you. I'm just realistic about this stuff. I don't like the fact that the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC, but they are, and they have been for a while, and it's time that everyone just accepts it. It's the Cowboys conference to lose, barring some sort of catastrophic injury to like a Dak Prescott or a Micah Parsons.
I'm 90, percent of the way there with you. If I had to power rank the NFC right now,
which you do, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Every Monday, or every Tuesday. Yeah. So if I had to, at this moment, power rank the NFC, depending on how Monday night goes, I'm either going Cowboys, 49ers, Eagles, Vikings, or 49ers, Cowboys, Eagles, Vikings. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are going to be in front of the 49ers regardless for me. But yeah, I would probably, like you said, depending on what happens on Monday, I'd probably inch the 49ers up in front of the Eagles at this point, as the Eagles turnover luck kind of regresses back to something a little more normal. And but those are the three. It's Cowboys, 49ers, Eagles, and I think the Vikings are kind of on the outside looking in. And look, you saw it in this game. They're a second tier team, and obviously they can win games. Really nice win in Buffalo last week, but to think that they're going to run through the postseason and beat three, minimum two, teams like the Cowboys, it's just not going to happen. The team's just not that good.
I thought it was interesting. Like, do you remember when you were a kid, or I guess we have kids now, so we see it. And there were just some days where my parents called them growing pains. I don't know what your parents called them, but there were just random days when like everything hurt when you were a little kid.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking
about?
Yep. Yeah, growing pains. So I think today the Vikings kind of had growing pains. Like, this game was within 7 points with like 5 minutes to go in the half. This was a 10-3 game with like 7 minutes to go in the half. And the hallmark of those first 30 minutes, I thought, were just missed tackles. Like, I thought the Vikings were just getting run over. Pollard was like ripping through tackles. There was one really nice run where he had to the right side where CeeDee Lamb just had Patrick Peterson in like a legal choke slam. It was incredible. And just there was this just physicality, and it seemed like every time the Vikings tried to step somewhere, it was just a big owie for them, you know? And I think every team has those days. I think it's collective. I think it's contagious. And I think you could just tell this was tough early. And then if you have moments like that against the Dallas Cowboys, they're just going to beat you to death on the back end, because Ezekiel Elliott looks like he's 22 again, which is awesome. And Pollard is who we knew he was for so long, but for one reason or another, just wasn't given the opportunity to have a more of a featured role.
Yeah, I mean, all the explosive plays were on Dallas's side of this. The Vikings did have that red zone possession. TJ Hockenson probably has to make that catch, and then maybe the game is a little bit different, but I don't think so, man. I just, the Cowboys pass rush was utterly dominant in this. The number of times Vikings offensive linemen were in Kirk Cousins' lap in this game were numerous. There were a lot of those times. And then just offensively, there just wasn't really an answer for anything the Cowboys were doing. There were sustained drives that put points on the board. There were big plays that put points on the board. It was just, again, I don't want to overstate it. I want to make it sound like, you know, we just watched like Alabama Vanderbilt or something like that. But this was one team that was significantly better than the other one. And that's how the game played out.
So Dan Quinn, and I was talking about this earlier this week with Cody Alexander, who's Match Quarters on Twitter, really smart. He was a defensive grad assistant, I think, at Baylor, and does a lot of like high-end consulting and stuff now, writes a lot of books about defensive football. And we were having a really interesting discussion about Dan Quinn, who he said this, and I agree because he's smarter than me, and so I just looked it up and he was right. But that Dan Quinn got a lot of credit for being multiple last year, right? But he's even more so this year. I think his defense is actually, like, last year it was a lot of, hey, I'm cute, I'm putting Micah Parsons in a lot of silly places. This year it's like, am I playing cover two? No, I'm going to play cover one. No, I'm going to play this. And every week is different. Every week is really strange looking to the quarterback. And that first third down that the Vikings had, Kirk Cousins, cover one look, and he you know, Leighton Vander Esch drops in his, into his zone, and he sees Micah Parsons coming from Kirk Cousins' blind side. So he just goes, I'm going to move over here because he's not going that way. And, like, he could see it in real time. And so he could see Micah Parsons coming to Kirk Cousins' blind side. He moved away from Kirk Cousins' blind side and just absolutely cut off the one receiver that he could have even thrown the ball to. And that, to me, is just one of those examples of, they talk about the game slowing down, things being more fluid. And I think the game is really slowing down for Dallas's defense, depending on what your statistical analysis, depending on your advanced stat of choice that you like, Dallas is either like the first, second, or third best defense in the NFL right now. And I think those are the little moments that show it. What is your favorite, by the way?
Probably my own. That no one else looks at, that I just make up and keep to myself.
I love
Kingsbury.
It.
Kingsbury is the robot.
Fair enough.
That makes the spreadsheet.
Eagles, Colts.
So the Eagles escape the Jeff Saturday death trap in Indianapolis and end up winning this game. I know we've talked about the Colts and Jeff Saturday. We'll get to it in a second, but the Eagles basically went out and said, let's get Linval Joseph, let's get Ndamukong Suh, let's just get every sort of, you know, over the past, it's like an all-decade team of run defenders to put on their defensive line after what happened Monday night. And I don't think we really saw it in full in this game, but, you know, they recognized that as a major weakness and decided they would address it that way. Defensively, they were fine for the most part. Jonathan Taylor had some big plays in this one. Offensively is where it seems like it's just sliding back a little bit. Again, I don't think there's any major panic to do here. I think this is an A-minus type of team in the NFL as opposed to an A-plus type of team. But the reason they were close in this game is, you know, same thing we saw Monday night. They lost two fumbles in this game. They were, going into that loss against Washington, they were literally getting, they were plus two per game in turnover differential. They were getting two extra possessions per game. They have lost the turnover battle back-to-back weeks now, and this was one of those, you know, just, you get bad bounces every once in a while. A.J. Brown fumbles after a first down catch. That's just crappy things that happen that can swing games in this league, and they end up surviving it anyway.
I'm interested in what happens with the run defense in particular, because they did get, they got popped a little bit by John Taylor today, and I guess you could argue that, and last week too, the Commanders are hot, and they also have two really good running backs. So did they just face three really good running backs in 2 weeks? And Howie Roseman, the Eagles GM, is just kind of working as hard as he can to patch any developing holes. Like he's getting the flex seal out. He's not letting any leaks happen. Or is this thing really a concern? And if it is really a concern, Linval Joseph, I like fine. I was talking to, you know, some people about Ndamukong Suh recently, and I think as brilliant as he is, as brilliant as his career has been, I think he is more of a freelancer because he's very smart, right? Is he going to play like gap assignment football for you? And and really just like, hey, Ndamukong, like, we need you to go in on this down and just shove your body in between this space and everything's going to be cool. Because if that were the case, I think he would have been signed, and not to say he didn't have his options, but I think he would have been signed for a much larger amount of money a little while ago. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I just think, like, he's so good, and some of these other guys, Robert Quinn, so good. Linval Joseph has been so good for so long. You know, is this the answer? Like, do you need kind of like these artful run stoppers, or do you just need more big bodies? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I guess big bodies just aren't readily available, you know? So this is kind of what you're left with, you know?
It seems to me like almost an overreaction. However, there's no real downside to it. It's not like, oh man, like we could have signed Travis Kelce, but instead we signed Ndamukong Suh. Uh-oh. Like, you're just bringing in dudes who will fix what is a problem at the moment. And look, this problem will probably get fixed when Jordan Davis comes back, and they can go back to those what were they? They were putting like basically five men up front on the defensive line with Jordan Davis right over the center, and that's how they were stopping the run. And when they didn't do that, they weren't playing the run very well at all when Jordan Davis came off the field. So he'll come back, he'll be on the field, they'll have a better run defense, and that's kind of going to be the answer here.
You know what that move does affect, though, Gary, and you know who's probably going to be a little cheesed is the special teams coordinator, right?
Yeah.
You're sitting there and you're saying, here's two guys that I can't touch.
Mm-hmm.
We're short-staffed. He's probably pounding his desk saying, dang it, you know, get me get me like another fifth-string running back I can turn into a punt gunner.
Yeah.
But they were running the five-down lineman stuff a little bit today. But they were getting gashed underneath when they were doing that a little bit. We've seen, it's interesting, Evero in Denver ran a lot of the five down lineman stuff against Tennessee a few weeks ago, and it was so good because they just were like, yeah, you don't have any wide receivers, so we're just going to treat you like that. And I feel like it was reasonable to suspect that you could also treat the Colts that way, but to their credit, you know, I guess Parks Frazier's credit, I guess Matt Ryan's credit, they were kind of hitting them with some of the underneath stuff today and penalizing them for that.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to talk about the Colts thing one more time because I've been chewing on it for like a week now, because I feel like it was just so undercovered is probably not right. It's probably just one of those things that didn't come across my face as much as it should have, but we probably overreacted to the Jeff Saturday thing, right? Like, we did the show midweek, and it was kind of like, this is going to be a disaster. But we also did that show under the impression that Sam Ehlinger would be the quarterback.
Right.
Jim Irsay is pretending like it never happened. It's like, yeah, sure, you want to play Matt Ryan? Of course. Yeah, of course you want to play Matt Ryan. Like, Frank Reich wanted to play Matt Ryan. Everyone there wanted to play Matt Ryan. So Matt Ryan is back, and, you know, Jonathan Taylor is also back. I'm not sure this team is any better than it would have been if Frank Reich and Marcus Brady were still there. And, you know, I'm good for Jeff Saturday. He's proving he's an NFL caliber coach through two games, I guess you could say. But yeah, this was supposed to be the thing the whole time. I mean, you know, if Dean Spanos, like, you know, tells Brandon Staley he has to bench Justin Herbert for Chase Daniel, and then they play terribly for three games, and he's like, oh, you offensive coaches blew this. Yeah, I mean, you just set up everyone to fail so you could get Jeff Saturday in there because he's your buddy. And we all know that. It's still just stunning to me that Matt Ryan's back and everyone's just pretending like, you know, that whole other thing didn't happen.
Yeah, I thought Nick Sirianni, I give him credit to a point because most coaches would say nothing. And Frank Reich is Nick Sirianni's mentor, obviously. And he said after the game, like, it's basically Frank Reich and my dad. You know, those are the people who I would, you know, count as the most important people in my life. And he said basically, which was probably the meanest thing that he could say in the moment, which is, you guys are, I can't say how I really feel.
Yep.
And I think, so we all know what that means. And I think a lot of coaches feel that way. And editor Mitch Goldish and I were discussing this today because, you know, the Colts were leading for most of this game. And I had said to him, what are we going to do if the Colts go 2-0 under Jeff Saturday? And Mitch made a good point, which is to your point, which was they would probably be 2-0 if Frank Reich was here during this time period. And I think both of you guys are absolutely right. So I think we're at a pretty dangerous crossroad. Not dangerous, right? Because we're all going to be fine. None of these guys are treating people in hospitals or anything, right? That we know of. You know, let's hope that there's no Jeff Saturday emergency clinic or something like that where he's able to see patients. But we're heading towards a pretty consequential hiring, firing cycle that my guess is going to be a little bit more robust than we initially expected it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jeff Saturday is, let's say, 4-2 at that point or 5-1, I don't know. That might be a lot. But let's say it's good. It's better than we thought.
Yeah.
How many more of these owners are going to be empowered to hire their friends who are just football adjacent? And Albert Breer, our esteemed coworker, who's slightly better friends with you than me, he made the point about Deion Sanders, which is fair. Mm-hmm. Deion was one of the, I guess if I had to rate my NFL Network analyst, probably one of the less alert analysts on television. Mm-hmm. And yep. Less, like, I think the one time he commented on a player's angry tweet and didn't know he was a safety for the Panthers. So,
yeah.
But he ended up being a really good college football coach. That possibility exists. I understand that. But boy, could it get silly, right? And Jeff Saturday's brought up Aaron Boone, which is another one. Fair. Carlos Beltran, I think, was going to be a pretty good manager until he got caught cheating, right? He wasn't allowed to be a baseball manager anymore after that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So these things exist. I just don't know. I think we could be spiraling down a weird toilet, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Bengals Steelers.
Weird toilet. I like that. It's a good fantasy football team name for next year. So the Bengals end up splitting the season series with the Steelers here. This one was, it was a little bit dicey. I thought this was one of Joe Burrow's more impressive performances. No Jamar Chase in this one. TJ Watt made a couple of just superhuman plays, as he does. And the Steelers felt like maybe they were, turning a corner might be overstating it, but just kind of getting back to what they were supposed to be defensively. And the Bengals still went out and they put together drives when they needed to put together drives. Burrow continues to, again, it's not Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, arm talent type stuff, but his ability to extend plays. What's the phrasing you use, Connor? Because you say it better than me. Like, his functional athleticism for the position is just... it's prototypical.
Yeah. I had an interesting text actually from the middle of the game from our friends at the Chargers Outside Zone podcast. Mm-hmm. Who are fans, and we are big fans of their podcast. Mm-hmm. As well. And avid listeners, and I got a text in the middle that said, I imagine Gary is dreading that he may potentially have to say something nice about the Steelers this week. And I think there was a point there where you were going to have to come on and roll your eyes while I talked a lot about Mike Tomlin.
Yeah. Look, I love Mike Tomlin. He is a fantastic coach. I actually come from a family of a lot of Steelers fans, a lot of Patriots fans too.
I thought you were gonna say, like, you were like related to Mike Tomlin.
Yes. that's lower in the bio. But no, this team was bad last year. And they just sort of got a lot of weird wins and a lot of weird bounces on the way to those wins, and it just hasn't happened this year. And Kenny Pickett, again, it feels too frantic. I'm trying to put myself in his position. It's not Zach Wilson frantic, but it's just frantic, and he's missing throws that you can't miss at this level as frequently as he's missing. And again, maybe it's one of those things that just, the more he's out there and when we get to year two, year three, it turns around. But it's just not a very good team right now.
It's weird because it's sort of the progression that we saw with Tua, but it also improved drastically when the talent improved around Tua. I would argue that Kenny Pickett's got the best homegrown set of wide receivers in the NFL. And it might not be close. I think there's a ton of talent here, ton of offensive talent. There was one play that he made where he escaped the pocket and he's rolling out to the Steelers sideline, and just like he looks so good and full of purpose.
Yes.
When he's doing it. And I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a bullet for a first down. But because we can't see anything in all 22, we have no idea what he's looking at. And then all of a sudden, you just see the throw, and then it's the camera just pans downfield, and there's just three defenders surrounding a wide receiver, and it's not close to anybody. Yeah. But it's not a throwaway either, and you're just like, what? What's going on here?
That's the difference right now is, like, I think he is a lot of times too quick to leave the pocket. However, it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look like it's about to be a disaster when he's leaving the pocket and he gets himself to space and then he just completely misfires.
That's it. And it's weird to me because he wasn't doing a lot of that in the preseason. I thought what I liked about him the most in the preseason was there was this Alex Smithian, like more athletic Alex Smithian vibe to him where it was just, okay, three steps and the ball's out. It's where it's supposed to go. And he has the wide receivers to play that way. And I guess the Steelers just kind of have to struggle with this idea until the quarterback talent comes up and finds a place where you can meet your wide receiver talent. I don't know how long that's going to take. I don't know if they have the right coordinator to do it. I don't know what their idea is in terms of a timeline, but this is really kind of where they're at right now. They're still a very good, well-coached defense, and they're trying to figure it out on offense. They're the Patriots.
Browns, Bills.
Man, I cannot wait to talk about Jacoby Brissett on this show. But we'll start with the Bills side of it. And so they survived this one, and they will stay in Detroit and play Thanksgiving. Although I think they said in the broadcast they are going to fly home and then fly back. But they end up holding on in Detroit against the Browns. Josh Allen, again, if you didn't know about the elbow injury, I think you would have looked at the last two or three weeks and said, okay, well, this is just, you know, this is just a dry stretch. This is just, you know, we talked early in the season when he was so efficient underneath and at the intermediate levels, and it looked like he was going to be invincible. I mean, he is invincible if they do that, because they can beat you in so many different ways, and now that efficiency is just kind of gone. He's just, you know, he's in a slump. He's on a bad streak. But I do kind of wonder as I watch him how much nerve damage to your elbow is affecting his accuracy at this point.
It's a fair question. And like you said, Josh Allen is still going to be fine if you just use him as what? Do you know anything about superheroes?
I mean, I guess a little. I think everyone does, though.
Well, so I was reading, we got 5-minute Marvel stories for bedtime, and I was reading my son the origin story of Thor, which I know nothing about. Mm-hmm. Batman is the only superhero in my eyes, and so that's all I care about, and that's all I watch. But Thor's hammer had a funny name, and I didn't know if you knew what Thor's hammer's name was.
I don't. What is it?
It's like some Swedish name that I can't pronounce.
Oh.
what
a letdown.
Mjolnir? Hold on.
Oh, man. I hope it is Mjolnir. That's pretty good. Are we both just frantically Googling Thor's hammer's name now?
Mjolnir. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah,
Mjolnir.
There's umlauts in there.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Mjolnir. Okay. So you can basically just use Josh Allen as Mjolnir. and you could still probably get almost as far. Remember, we're still in a too high shell league. The only reason that Josh Allen's able to get stuff downfield is because he can run. And he's also a really good quarterback. And so he breaks some of that stuff up. He breaks the ceiling. But if you just used him as a hammer, I think you're still just as effective given the defenses that you're likely to see throughout the playoffs. So to me, yeah, does it suck? Does it bring them back to earth a little bit? Sure. But I think, otherwise, I'm not drastically concerned about it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and then look, they separated themselves in the second half, and we did talk about this on the midweek show when we did the mailbag this previous week, but man, the way people are reacting to these November games, you had to, had they lost this game, you'd have had to go all the way back to 2021 to find a Super Bowl champion that lost three games in a row in November, or back to 2020 to find somebody who lost three of four in November, or the Chiefs actually lost three of four, but it was in October when they won the Super Bowl. Teams go through these stretches, and again, I don't think there's a fundamental problem with the offense. I do still worry a little bit about this defense. I think a year ago, they were a little susceptible to power run, and not just the Mac Jones three-pass game, but Jonathan Taylor ran all over them. I think they had some issues in teams that could basically stay on schedule against them and stick with the run against them. This year, I just think they're under-talented in the secondary. And there are just too many times over the course of a game where there are just guys in single coverage, and someone's got to be in single coverage most plays, and they just can't match up against someone. Amari Cooper pretty much had his way with all their guys, with all three of their top corners in this game. You know, Donovan Peoples-Jones made a couple plays in one-on-one coverage. I mean, there's no real fix to that unless Greg Rousseau comes back and that pass rush just is utterly dominant down the stretch.
Yeah, and it goes back to one of our earlier questions, which is, do we think that they missed the chance to, I don't know, put the hammer down, the Mjolnir down, and and add another piece or two to that defensive line? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a thought. But you're right. Amari Cooper was free to do what he pleased today. And I, you know, sometimes if you're a defensive coordinator, like obviously you're not like, yeah, I'm thrilled to that this guy's going to gain all these yards, but maybe sometimes you go into a game thinking, okay, if they're just going to try to bludgeon us with Amari Cooper, I'm not super concerned about that generally. Mm-hmm. And maybe those were kind of the chances that you took, because you had to sell out so much for Nick Chubb and try to stop the running game. So if that's the case, I think I'm okay with it. But you're right. I do think that they're not asking Josh Allen to do a lot with these offensive game plans right now. He took a lot of the underneath stuff, missed a lot of the underneath stuff. We'll see. You know, just give him, make him stay in Detroit and just like a big old ice bath. You know?
Yeah.
I
can't believe they're going back. There's too much snow out there. Just stay in Detroit. Get a nice hotel. Sleep in the locker room.
People love Detroit.
Detroit's a nice place. I do want to mention, because this is his second last start, barring a Deshaun Watson injury when he comes back. Jacoby Brissett was absolutely dealing in this game. And if their tight ends, it was actually not Njoku. It was Harrison Bryant, and then it was the guy whose name I'm going to blank on, Farrell Brown. From Houston, they drop back-to-back touchdowns. Just catch the ball. It's a touchdown. It's hitting your hands. You are open. You should get a touchdown. That might have made this game, because it would have given the Browns like a 10-point lead late in the first half. Maybe things go a little bit differently. But regardless of that, Brissett was great in this game. He's not a franchise quarterback. If you're looking for a bridge guy, I mean, just how many teams are looking at Jacoby Brissett right now and being like, ah, you know, if we had that guy, things would probably be going a little bit better. Maybe in Denver, they're looking at it right now and being like, huh, that guy's making $1.5 million this year. If we had him, or if we had Teddy Bridgewater, or we had someone like that, maybe we'd be sitting at like 6-3 right now.
Don't even get me started on the Broncos, but I guess we still have to talk about the Broncos. So
I know, at some point,
get
next.
Me started. Yeah, yeah. At some point, get me started on the Broncos.
That's a segue, Connor.
Raiders, Broncos.
Nice win for the Raiders here. Overtime win, comeback win. I will say there was a because whatever we people like you and me, Connor, we were desperate and we're imaginative to an extent, and we just kind of grasp onto narratives. And Devontae Adams in the second half, he was getting shut down after a big first half, and the Raiders are losing, and he gets a frustration penalty, complaining to the refs, and it was kind of like, oh man, this is all going off the rails for the Raiders here, and Josh McDaniels is going to lose it. But no, they pull it together, and they end up forcing overtime and getting the win in overtime. I do want to talk about Russ, though, because Clint Kubiak gets the play calling duties for this game. We saw an opening drive where they did a lot of quick game. We saw that for a couple of weeks under Daryl Bevel back in Seattle. Did some quick game, put together a drive. First half looked, he didn't look like a franchise quarterback, but he looked like a competent quarterback. And then it dried up. Raiders made their adjustment. There was nothing else to turn to. And there just aren't answers right now with this quarterback.
Right, and I just don't know, like, if you're Nathaniel Hackett, I feel really bad because I just don't know. You're basically showing the new owners, like, okay, you thought it was me, fair enough. I'm going to hand over play calling duties. It's not any different. You're doing everything that you can possibly do as a head coach, and all you can do at this moment is just take it. And it probably sucks because he's not Russell Wilson anymore. It's not even close. And to the point where the one thing that stuck out to me was the end of this game, end of regulation, they have a Hail Mary left to throw. And Russ just skids it 8 yards behind Cortland Sutton. And Cortland Sutton just throws his arms up in the air and just shakes his head like, this is a joke. And I said it was Hackett. He was on the sidelines and he was clapping and he had that look on his face like, you know, when you take your kids to someone else's house and they break something and you have to look like you still love them, but also let them know that they've let you down in such a significant way.
Yep.
And so that was the look. And I just don't know what else you do here. I don't know what the answer is.
I mean, they were, in a way, lucky to get to overtime in this game. You cited the last play of regulation for Denver's offense. I would cite the second to last play, which was, again, you rewind back to the opening night, Monday night in Seattle, which I know a lot of people are saying, oh, this was Russ's best game, this Raiders. No, it wasn't. He was probably a little bit better the first time they played the Raiders. He was probably a little bit better when they played Seattle in the opener. And at the end of that game, everyone got on Hackett because it was, oh, you have a $250 million quarterback and you didn't put it in his hands to win it. You relied on the kicker and the kicker missed. And that's fine. So today we saw them and we've seen it a couple of times this year. We saw it Thursday night when they lost to the Colts. They put it in Russ's hands and, you know, let's, you know, win us a game here. That last play of regulation, it's 3rd and 10. They're up 3. The Raiders are out of timeouts. It's the first snap after the 2-minute warning. So, you can look at it and say, okay, we're gonna take, another 40 something seconds off the clock, punt it back to them. And, our defense is going to not give up a field goal and we're going to get out of here. Or you can say, we are going to go for the first down and we're going to win this. Two open receivers, didn't get either of them. He rolled out and just missed the throw by so much. So clock stops. It's why look, Raiders ended up settling for a field goal, but the Raiders were in position to have a series, a goal-to-goal series, one because of a nice play design to Josh Jacobs, which, by the way, they should do more because he did some of that at Alabama, but also because they got that free timeout on the broken play that just wasn't going to work because you're just saying, oh, put it on our $250 million quarterback. Doesn't matter that he makes $250 million. Doesn't play like a $250 million quarterback.
Yeah. There was the 3rd and 8 at the he cannot see the middle of the field, by the way, at all.
Yeah.
It's stunning. Like, teams are just letting receivers go in the middle of the field. They're just like, here, go ahead. 3rd and 8. It was a Cortland Sutton drop, but like, I don't know, man, got to put that ball in, like, is that exactly where he wanted it? Like, you basically cleared out the middle of the field. You had two open receivers that both could have carried the ball to the first down. I don't know. This is just, and this is sort of the Tom Brady quick game stuff that he wants to do. And I understand even Tom Brady throws bad passes, but he doesn't throw a lot of them. And he can see the whole field. Russell cannot see the whole field. And I hate being, I'm short too. I'm, you know, it would be frustrating if people told me that my entire life. I get it. But holy smokes, this is, I can't imagine what it's like in those offensive meetings. It just has to be, it's like going to the Elite Four with your starter Pokemon, like right after the original city, you know? You know, it's just, it's impossible. It's not impossible, but it's hard.
I like Psyduck. you can go back, again, if you want to know what they did in the first half, you can go back to, it was 2015 Seahawks, second half of that season. They did it. They used that quick game for a couple of weeks, but it only works for so long. And everyone says, oh, you're doing this now. Okay, well, now we're ready for it. And it doesn't work anymore. And that's what happened in the second half of this game. That's why they had no offense when they came out of halftime. It just feels like there's going to, in 3 or 4 years, be a metaphorical just graveyard of offensive coaches in that Broncos building, because they're going to keep on bringing in people to fix it. Maybe there is a fix. I don't know what it would possibly be at this point. So don't hire me.
Right. I mean, so, you know, I don't think there's any secret that they will. I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that they will probably make a change at the end of this season. And so I think you bring in the next guy who's going to campaign himself as the Russ guy. I'm going to fix the Russ guy. And then when that guy fails, do you bring in another, I'm going to fix the Russ guy? And here's my sub question to that. Do you think, because I bet if you polled offensive coordinators, but around the time that this happened, around the time that Russell Wilson became available, who would risk possibly their only head coaching opportunity with that guy as your quarterback? I bet not a whole lot of people would have raised their hand and said, yeah, sign me up for that. Now, people would take the job because everybody wants a head coaching job. But if you had to pick your guy, I think there's a lot of them that wouldn't have picked their guy. And so my question is, who's going to, after Hackett, who's going to risk their one and only potential head coaching opportunity on being the fix Russ guy? Because that's a tough gig, man.
Jets, Patriots.
All right, we'll get to the wonderful Marcus Jones in just a moment here, but I guess we have to start this off again with Zach Wilson, and I'm not sure what else there is to say. I guess it's a good time to cue up our Simpsons clip of the week here.
It's the Krusty Burglar!
Oh my God, he's stealing all the burgers! Why, you little... I got you! You!
Oh, oh my God. It's all just an act.
Stop! He's already dead.
Check his medic alert bracelet.
That's really funny.
Oh man. Part of me wants to be like, okay, Bill Belichick does this to every young Jets quarterback, and so let's just throw all these out. But at some point, you gotta. They play the Patriots twice a year, so at some point you have to figure this out. I thought this was as bad as Zach Wilson has looked, because I felt like it was also something of a restrained Zach Wilson, where they kind of probably said to him, okay, enough of the foot pop stuff, just play in structure and just play it safe and just keep us in this game. And the ball was just not going where it should go. I don't know. I don't know if there's a short-term fix besides let's turn it over to Joe Flacco. I don't know if you do that at this point, because if you turn over to Joe Flacco and you finish 9-8 and miss the playoffs, what do you just do? You're stuck for next year, Maybe you go get Jacoby Brissett. I don't know.
Boy. So I think you have to find yourself in the quarterback conversation no matter what this offseason. If I'm Woody Johnson, here's what I would like Woody Johnson to see. The fact that a year ago, this was the worst roster in the NFL. I think right now, with a really good A-plus starting quarterback, this team is 7-2. So what would that be? 8? Like, they'd be like 8-2 right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I think. Like, let's say you took... Like, when they got Brett Favre when Mike Tannenbaum was there in 2008, and they took, like, that caliber of a veteran passer and put him into this roster, like, that archetype onto this roster, I think you're probably pretty close to 8-2. I mean, this is a good team. This is a really, really good football team with a bad quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. The other side of this, it's just not going well with Matt Patricia calling the plays in New England. Mac Jones certainly avoided any catastrophic mistakes in this one. He still doesn't look comfortable. And also, look, that Jets pass rush was wrecking anything the Patriots wanted to do anyway in this one. But, you know, Mac Jones's problems were not anywhere near what Zach Wilson's problems were. And, of course, when you get to the end of this game, and we talked about it this summer, you know, Marcus Jones is a 5'8" cornerback that the Patriots drafted 85th overall, and it was kind of like, return specialists are cool, but who gets a chance to return the ball anymore? I mean, it's what value does that guy have going forward? And obviously, Bill Belichick, you know, he knew this was coming. He knew Marcus Jones would have a walk-off punt return touchdown at some point this season.
And they wouldn't call an egregious block in the back.
Mm.
And... if you're a GM, this is an honest question. Mm-hmm. Let's say you draft a guy and he wins you one game.
Yeah.
Does he then fulfill his value to you at the NFL level?
Is it worth it? A day yeah. two pick.
I say yes.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Like, if he single-handedly wins you a game that you may not have won otherwise.
Yeah.
From one play. I think you got to say, like, huh, okay, this is, you know, yes.
His wins over replacement, wins above replacement. Love that stat. it is automatically one for Marcus Jones now. But
yeah.
Yeah, that was it. He was phenomenal at Houston. He's really good. And we're going to get to Cordarrelle Patterson a little bit later in the show, but it's just like, man, how many opportunities are you going to even have to, you know, it's like in basketball, like, I don't know, bringing in like a three-quarters court shot specialist. And it's like, yeah, he can hit these like twice as much as anyone else. So he'll hit like, you know, one out of every 400 instead of one out of every 100, like 800. I don't know.
You know what? Can we go back to Zach Wilson one more time?
Yeah.
Can we double dip on Zach Wilson?
Oh, we sure can.
I thought the most egregious play, and I've never, so this is just me speaking. I think now some of our fans I've read, or listeners, I should call them.
we don't have fans.
Yeah, let me back that up. Yeah,
we have people who reluctantly tune into the show.
That was way too presumptive. The people who are held at gunpoint and played this podcast, they don't know. I'm sure they could Google what we look like, but I've read some of the comments. They've got a pretty accurate description of who we are. So I don't think I have to keep saying the caveat of I've never played quarterback at a high level. I think everyone knows that. They can listen to me for 30 seconds and they can know that. But towards the beginning of the second half, they completed that absurd deep pass to Denzel Mims, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that happened, but it was great. And then you get yourself in a position where you're on the border of the red zone. It's 3rd and 3. You're running sort of a zone read type deal, and everybody, All of your linemen are pulling to the left. Yeah, my left. I had to hold out the L. All of the linemen are pulling to the left. Your tight end in the backfield is going to the left. You have Elijah Moore, who's crashing really, really hard into the left. Everybody is sucked in. And at that mesh point, like the Patriots defensive end is already there. He's already got a hand on James Robinson. You know that's going to be an 8-yard loss and then field goal time. If you're Zach Wilson, yank that ball out and see what happens. Like, you know, okay, he had one Patriots player to kind of contend with there, but Elijah Moore was there. Like, maybe he can help in a way. And they were actually moving the ball against Buffalo somewhat well by just allowing Zach Wilson to escape the pocket sometimes on these zone read plays. And he had a nice run in this game at the beginning of the game too, but let him, or not let him, he's got to pull that ball. I think he's got to pull that ball and he's got to pick up that first down with his legs. But I think the nuances of all this stuff, the whole thing just seems like the game is very fast for him still. But
yes,
to me, nothing has slowed down for him.
Yep. And I wonder, I mean, look, that play might just be a mistake. We see guys make errors in judgment every once in a while. I do wonder if it's, again, I got the sense watching this that he was being coached to basically not lose the game. Just don't, you know what happens against his Belichick defense. Just don't do anything wild and let's just, let's let the defense try and do its thing and do it that way. And it almost worked. I think this was probably before you were covering the NFL in any way, shape, or form, but you correct me if I'm wrong. That Braden Mann punt was very, very shades of Matt Dodge to Deshaun Jackson, the Tom Coughlin sort of tantrum on the field after that. That punt was brutally bad. That was really, really bad. That can't be returnable because all you're doing is getting to overtime at that point.
Yeah. I remember watching the Matt Dodge punt, I believe, at the sports office in the Daily Orange at Syracuse University. That was a couple months before I began my career as a professional NFL football writer. So that was the last season I did not cover. And interestingly enough, Gary, to connect all the time warps together, today was the first time that the Eagles entered the fourth quarter in a 10-point deficit and won since the miracle at the Meadowlands.
Really?
With Deshaun Jackson, that game.
Wow.
And today was also the first walk-off punt return since that game, which is very cool.
Man.
A lot of neat history today.
I guess it technically wasn't a walk-off. They had to kick off after that, I think.
True.
Close enough, though.
What a womp womp. Yeah, there were 5 seconds left, but did you really need to bring that up, Gary?
Sorry. I'm a stickler.
Did you, what was your thought? Block in the back or no block in the back?
Probably block in the back, but that's a spot foul, right? They're going to get like a, I mean, what would it be? If you call that at the 10, so like a 42-yarder to win it, right?
Yeah.
Do I have that rule right? I don't know. Shelby, have you officiated in the NFL? Can you answer our question?
Should we just back it up and work around it?
No, you can leave it like that if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just count me back in.
Okay. 3, 2. No, you count you back in. That's so weird.
Sorry.
3, 2, 1. Connor, go.
3, 2, 1. Yeah, I think Tom Coughlin was trying to chase Matt Dodge off the field, if I remember correctly. He was so angry at that moment. And sure, I think he even said it post-game, right? What did you tell him? Just don't kick it to Deshaun Jackson. Please, God, like, of all the things that you can do, just don't kick it to him. And I'm sure that that was a similar deal with the Jets.
Man, yeah.
The question is, do you... I think this is an interesting sort of litmus test for Robert Saleh, right? What do you do in this situation? Because after the game, you called your offense dog shit, which was hilarious. And then do you kind of start swinging your, oh man, what was the hammer again?
Mjolnir.
We
should have made an audio drop and then,
Mjolnir.
Shall we could just put it in there?
Yeah. Let's have a Mjolnir drop the next time we have a show. Do you swing the Mjolnir and start like, I don't know, you cut the punter? Do you do something crazy to sort of to because I do think that there's merit to letting them know we are good enough now that that's not acceptable.
Yes.
It's not like cool that we're 6-3. We're supposed to be 6-3. We should be better than 6-3. And that's not something that can fly here.
Well, I think there's also for Robert Saleh, probably a sense of rightfully, we can't win an NFL game with the offense playing like this. Everything just comes down to, cause I was wondering as this game went to overtime, I was like, if the Jets win the toss, do you defer? And it just say like, we have no hope of actually putting together a scoring drive. So let's just try and get a 3-and-out. And then maybe we only have to get like 20 yards into field goal range or something like that.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think he was probably so frustrated that might be one of those things. And of course people would couch it as an all time. Didn't Marty Morningwig do that?
Yes. Yes.
He deferred.
It was because of the wind, but that was also back when field goal wins a game.
Correct. Yeah. So he had deferred, but and I'm sure that there would be some shades of that with Robert Saleh if they lost, especially, but I think he's justified and he's a defensive head coach. But you have to be wondering what else you could do at this point. You have a really good offensive line. You have one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL. You have Garrett Wilson, if he was activated, would be the best rookie wide receiver in the NFL by a country mile. And I don't think it would be even close. You have all these things. And so I think that there is. I think you're putting the more pressure on Zach and your offensive coordinator, and I think that's fair.
Panthers, Ravens.
All right, let's go to the lightning-ish round. This was another defensive slog here. This one was 3-3 going into the fourth quarter. Ravens end up pulling one out in their own building. On one hand, we continue to be a little bit concerned about what the Ravens are doing offensively, but defensively, they're really good again. Baker Mayfield was back under center for Carolina, and early in this game, I was like, everything they threw was behind the line of scrimmage. It was kind of like, I don't know, let's just go. What are you doing? You got nothing to lose. Start chucking it. But man, there was nothing. There's nothing you could do between the pass rush and the fact that there was just nothing open downfield. This was a huge mismatch on that side of the ball.
It is really nice to have Jason Pierre-Paul as your ninth rotational defensive pass rusher, and you use him a couple times a game, and that's a really neat thing for you to have. I think that they are so incredibly deep defensively, and it's weird this time of year to be that deep on defense. So I think they have that going for them, and there's going to be these weird games where you just get absolutely nothing out of Lamar Jackson and the offense. They're not going to be able to run the ball. All the passes look weird. That's part of being Team Raven. That's part of life. But that defense is just built to they're wrecking balls, man.
Rams, Saints.
So the Saints get one. They move the 4-7. Let's talk about the Rams a little bit, though. They're 3-7 now. This is over. Cooper Kupp on IR right now, might return later in the season, but it might be just completely out of reach to make the postseason at that point. Matthew Stafford left this one with a concussion. They did, I will say, as a member of the football viewing public, thank goodness did not turn it over to John Walford. We got Bryce Perkins coming off the bench in this one. Not a whole lot going on here. They did, to an extent, get the run game going, but it looks like a tired, worn down team that just is not going to go anywhere.
they're like Motley Crue at the end of the tour. It's just without all the hard. I don't know why I kind of sort of weirdly accused them of being hard drug users, but that wasn't the intent. So sorry about that, Rams.
Sorry, Motley Crue. I don't know.
Yes. Well, we've all seen Behind the Music, Gary. We know.
Takes a lot of energy to play Dr. Feelgood.
True. Here's how I knew this game was over. First quarter, third and one, they run. I mean, their whole offense, right, is based off of backfield motion and what happens during, before, after that backfield motion, and then running plays off of that. They had Tutu Atwell is kind of their fly sweep guy in this game, and so third and one, they just hand it to him. You have Higbee and Ben Skoranek out on the end, but the Saints had like three more defenders there. They just clobbered him 3 yards in the backfield, and at that point, I just said, okay, so you can't do this without Cooper Kupp, and we were right.
Oh, man. By the way, Daniel Tiger episode where Katarina Kitty Cat insists she will only wear her tutu forever, and she repeatedly says tutu all the time. That's a rallying cry in our house. So I was really glad to see Tutu Atwell get a long touchdown in this game.
Yeah, good for Tutu. Tutu all the time.
Tutu all the time.
Bears, Falcons.
So the Falcons are still in it. We shouldn't dismiss them in the way that I know I'm about to. Maybe you'll salvage
this. I question this being in the lightning round, to be honest.
Yeah? I don't know. Yeah. It was kind of a... The Bears are still game. Matt Eberflus is doing a great job. Lots of respect there. And yes, the Falcons continue to overachieve this season, but the reason they won this game was not because of the better team, but it was for a cool reason. That's Cordarrelle Patterson finally got his record-breaking kickoff return touchdown, which is awesome. And I think it's the only reason he has been returning kicks this year is because he wanted the record. So they said, you can keep doing it until you get it, which again, is just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I want to set the record for most half-court shots. So you keep taking them, but you're probably not going to. And then he finally makes one.
Very cool. It was a, very happy. It was a big day for special teams coordinators everywhere. It was a big day for return guys everywhere. It was a big day for MMQB editor Mitch Goldich, who last year wrote Diminishing Returns, the definitive Devin Hester piece about the disappearance of the X-Factor return man, which was really, really good, and you should go read it if you haven't already. So big day all around for special teams. We're bringing it back, baby. Big day for – I'm going to call Mike West off tonight. I think he'll be excited about this.
Yeah, just say hi.
Yeah.
Lions, Giants.
So the Giants have hung around in every game all season until Detroit came to town. And the Lions took control of this one and just held on, which was a positive for them, obviously, because one, it counts as a win. But two, we've seen them blow leads, and they didn't. So nice win here for the Lions.
Don't look now, but Dan Campbell's team, I think, is what, winners of three straight?
Winners of three straight. You just wonder... We've talked all season about that mediocre middle of this league and how gigantic it is, how many teams are in that mediocre middle, the goulash. And the Lions are right there. And if the Lions don't blow that game against the Vikings early in the year, what are we saying about them? If the Lions don't blow a game against the Dolphins a couple weeks ago, what are we saying about them right now? The wins and losses count, but this team is really not that bad, and I think there probably is, even before this game, there's probably an argument that they're just as good as the Giants.
They are in the goulash, baby. Very excited about this, and they looked exactly like we thought they would look at the beginning of the year, which is incredibly physical, grimy, especially if they get a little bit of a lead on you. This is a team that it's almost like the Spider-Man meme with the Giants, right? Them just pointing at one another and being like, yeah, we're going to try to win games in a very similar way. And this time, you know, I don't want to call it momentum. I don't know what exactly you do call it, but you know, they just kind of had more of a downhill in this game. And they took that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say to look, Abracadabra missed some throws in this game. He's had a really good season. This wasn't his best performance, except for a nice opening drive here for the Giants, but that was about it. I will continue to insist that people who are celebrating their breakout young quarterback and fantastic, that's you and your favorite team and your favorite quarterback. Just imagine a world where they're dropped into this Giants offense with this supporting cast. And, you know, things would probably be a lot different.
Things would be very different. Nice game for Wandell Robinson today, too. I think he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Commanders, Texans.
All right. It is time for us to accept that the Commanders are not going away. They're going to be relevant from here on in. And that's not necessarily because they beat the Texans. The Texans are not very good. The Texans were not competitive in any way, shape, or form in this game. But this Commanders defense is starting to do some things. And our guy who needs a nickname, Jonathan Allen, man, he was destroying people in this game.
The Death Punisher?
Yeah, let's try it out for a week. Probationary period.
We used to, I had a friend who at school would just take two of the most violent sounding names and put them together for any sort of recreational activity that we had to do with the whole school. And so, for example, like Vomit Pirates, I think was one of his big ones. Mm-hmm. And I actually carried that through most of my life, most of my adult life. If I ever went to like adult trivia night or something, we would be the Vomit Pirates. And, it's just like two mean sounding words together. So mm-hmm. he could be like knife wolf or like, you know, knife eagle or something like that. You know, Jonathan Allen, the knife eagle.
Grave burner. Just burns graves.
Grave burner. The taxpayer and the grave burner.
There you go. It's a crime. It got to be a crime. Can't just go around burning graves.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't let you do that. But listen, this is the nicest thing that we can say about the Commanders, and it's what we tried to say and think about the Commanders last year, right, Gary? Is that they are a budget, they're a budget 2020 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if we said that, but I'll sign up for it.
Well, we said it last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback. That was kind of our thought going into it.
Yes,
but who knew that the taxpayer would come in and rescue all hard working blue collar American citizens.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB Super Bowl champion. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.